George and Cordelia are both incurably deficient in their musicality, though in quite different ways. George has drive, energy, dedication, a passionate feeling for music, but he lacks some basic neurological competence. His ear is deficient. Cordelia, on the other hand, has a perfect ear, but one has the feeling that she will never get musical phrasing, will never improve her greasy tone, never be able to tell good music from bad, because she is profoundly deficient, although she does not realize it, in musical sensibility and taste. Does musical sensibility, musicality in the most general sense, also demand a specific neurological potential? Most of us can hope that there may be some harmony, some alignment, between our desires and our powers and our opportunities. But there will always be those, like George, whose abilities do not match their desires, and those, like Cordelia, who seem to have every talent except the most important one, judgment or taste. No one has all the talents, cognitively or emotionally. Even Tchaikovsky was keenly aware that his great fertility in melody was not matched by a comparable grasp of musical structure, but he had no desire to be a great architectonic composer like Beethoven. He was perfectly happy to be a great melodic one. Many of the patients or correspondents I describe in this book are conscious of musical misalignments of one sort or another. The musical parts of their brains are not entirely at their service, and may indeed seem to have a will of their own. This is the case, for example, with musical hallucinations, which are imposed upon and not sought by those who have them, and are thus quite different from the musical imagery or imagination one feels to be one's own. On the performance side, this is what happens with musicians' dystonia, when the fingers refuse to obey one's will and curl up or show a will of their own. In such circumstances, a part of the brain is at odds with one's intentionality, oneself. Even if there is no misalignment of a gross sort, where mind and brain are in conflict with one another, musicality, like other gifts, can create its own problems. I think here of the eminent composer Tobias Picker, who also, as it happens, has Tourette's syndrome. Soon after I met him, he told me that he had a congenital disorder that had bullied him all his life. I assumed that he was talking about his Tourette's, but he said no. The congenital disorder was his great musicality. He had, it seemed, been born with this. He had recognized and tapped out tunes in the first years of life, and had started to play the piano and compose at 4. By the age of 7, he could reproduce long and elaborate pieces of music after a single hearing, and constantly found himself overwhelmed by musical emotion. He said that it was understood, practically from the start, that he would be a musician, and that he had little chance of doing anything else, because his musicality was all-consuming. He would not, I think, have had it any other way, but he sometimes felt that his musicality controlled him rather than the other way around. Many artists and performers no doubt have the same feeling at times, but with music, as with mathematics, such abilities can be especially precocious and may determine one's life from a very early age. Listening to Picker's music, watching him play or compose, I have the feeling that he has a special brain, a musician's brain, very different from my own. It is a brain that works differently and has connections, whole fields of activity that mine lacks. It is difficult to know how much such differences may be congenital, as Picker puts it, and how much they are the result of training. A tricky question, since Picker, like many musicians, began intensive musical training in early childhood.